Thank you, Charlie. Tough intro to live up to, but I'm happy to be here. I always kind of start things off by saying good morning, family, because AA is the family that I always wished I was born into, as opposed to the family that I was born into. And no matter where we're sharing, and this is quite the diverse group here. I thought it was mostly Irish, but I see like six or seven states. Is there anyone actually here from Ireland today? You told me this was an Irish meeting. I love y'all anyway. Gee, I was going to be able to proudly say that I'm one quarter Irish on my mother's side, on my father's side. His mother's maiden name was Connors, so there's a little bit of Irish in me. I wore my green today. I know that a lot of you know the other Bob, be like Bob, Bob Ross. So that's as close as I could come to combining AA and in Ireland, of which there's nobody here, but anyways, 30 plus kind of minutes before we open up for share, Charlie suggested. So anyway, I'll try to see how concise I can be at putting this all into that time frame. I was born Catholic into a very, very small house over in Cincinnati on the west side. We have two sides of Cincinnati, the east side and the west side. And I was born into a family of alcoholism. I was an only child. My mother damn near died from having me. She developed a goiter the size of a small football on the side of her neck while she was pregnant with me. I think it scared dad so badly, and probably her, that they stopped at having me and didn't want to chance things after that. But anyway, it was like I said, a very 900 square foot home. Both of them smoked two packs of cigarettes a day. Mom didn't drink, dad drank excessively, and that was the life that I was kind of brought into. I had a couple of buddies on the street that were my salvation. Ralph across the street was kind of the tough guy from a big family. His mom and dad drank, but they were the fun family. Ours wasn't. Steve on the other side down the street a little bit, his dad was a police detective, and he was a pretty cool guy having a police detective for a dad. But so anyway, I survived childhood. I pretty much looked at what dad did on a daily, nightly basis. And I pretty much decided at an early age that I didn't want anything to do with alcohol, since I surmised that alcohol seemed to be the problem at an early age. I distinctly remember being Catholic. My mom would kneel me down, say my nighttime prayers, say when I'm about 8 or 9 years old, and I'd say my good Catholic good night prayers, and then I'd head to bed and I'd say my own prayer, which was, God, if you're listening, I'd really appreciate it if mom would take me and her and leave. And if that's not the case, if I wake up and dad to be dead, that'd be okay too. That was the amount of bitterness that I had towards this guy. Didn't do anything with me. He was of that age, as they say, back in the World War II era, where you were never told you were loved. Never got that from mom either. She was totally dysfunctional and this family disease. And so I made it through high school without having drunk at all. I didn't, like I said, I kind of used him as an anti-role model. I did not want to be like dad. So I got through high school, entered college. I did something very silly. I took way too many courses for a pre-med course. Of all things, I thought I might want to be a podiatrist when I grow up. And you didn't have to have a four-year medical degree. You could get by with 2 years of pre-med courses. It was really above my scope to be able to deal with all of that. So I started having panic attacks, and I started having some problems. And that's when my migraine headaches kicked in. I get the alcoholism from my dad. I get the migraine headaches from my mom. So I ended up taking a medication called Furoset. For those of you who aren't familiar with Furoset, it's a three-part drug. It's Tylenol, it's caffeine, and it is secobarbital, a barbiturate. Most people don't abuse barbiturates, and I didn't for 20 years. But anyway, being in that situation, I ended up taking, as I said, my medication properly for 20 years. And what I didn't know is that I'm a perfect candidate for addiction, given the family history. We did check the the ancestry thing and going back to Moses. We have alcoholism on my dad's side. So anyway, it was a long and storied history. His father was far worse than mine, and I can't imagine what his dad's dad was like. But anyway, I proceeded to do pretty well. I mean, I finally got through my 2 years of pre-med stuff. I didn't end up being a podiatrist. I ended up being an anesthetist. Anesthetist. We don't have anybody from Ireland, so I don't have to use my Irish accent. And anyway, it was a very rewarding job that I enjoyed very much. I specialized in epidurals, just took care of ladies that were having babies. And so I have 14,000 very happy women in Cincinnati from my services, for which I was very grateful to be able to do that for the birthing moms of Cincinnati. So anyway, when did the problem start? The problem started when I started looking at my parents. They're getting old and infirmed. I'm having a hard time dealing with my dad's alcoholism. My wife, understandably, did not want to take our two daughters and all of us over there, where we had to kind of go in and duck down to get below the pall of smoke with two-pack-a-day smokers and dad's drinking and not knowing where that was going. So we had our problems. Our girls got to be, in that teenage years, which were very difficult. I did not want to be the father that my father was. I wanted to be a father that my girls would like. And not having had a proper blueprint on parenting, I did not know what that was about. Got to do all the parenting, and I just got to be the nice guy, do things for them, get them things, take them places, all those things, so to speak. But when things started getting difficult and they started getting a little unruly with their behavior, it was my wife who dealt with that and not me, because I wanted to be the father that, I wanted them to like. So anyway, I end up spending, as I told you all, 20 years dealing with my headaches, okay, with this medication that had the addictive cecobarbital in it. However, when life started getting rough, as we all know, we start to look for some relief somewhere. And, I was getting quite anxious about the fact that I was going to have to be the one taking care of my parents because there was nobody else to take care of them. The quarrels I was having with my wife about, going over, not going over, just going over for a few minutes, blah, blah, blah. I ended up just going over by myself just to keep my dad happy. Just 5 minutes. Your mother just wants 5 minutes to see you. So I would do that kind of stuff. But anyway, I started having resentments about my migraine headaches. What I figured was, it's not fair that my headaches would show up at 3 o'clock in the morning a lot of times. And a lot of times it would come after a rough stretch of work where if I had a day off, I had a headache to look forward to. A lot of times I'd wake up the next morning with a headache. So anyways, I had this brilliant addictive idea that I had no idea where it came from. And that was, it ain't fair. I think I should do something about it. So why don't I take a couple of Furoset at night before I go to bed without a headache and see if it will keep me from having a headache on my day off? Well, guess what? It worked. I woke up the next morning, didn't have a headache. I found out that eventually, after a little bit of experimenting with this, that you get a little bit of a buzz if you're taking something that's not for pain. If you're taking something for pain, it takes care of the pain and you don't get a buzz necessarily. But if you take it without any incentive or any problem, you get a little warm, fuzzy buzz. So that was my first introduction into warm fuzzies that I thought was pretty nice and it was pretty good. I didn't have headaches and I didn't see anything wrong with this at all. So it progressed, of course. I'd be at work, I'd have some problems with a really rough day. I'd start to get some twinges where I thought, oh my God, is this a migraine coming on to make matters worse? I know, I'll take a couple of Furoset and get it before it gets me. So I'm starting more and more to take the medication for headaches that I perceive might be there. I, of course, didn't know it, but it was the disease starting to talk to me, saying, this is really good. You had a hard life. You've had a hard childhood. Your wife doesn't understand you. Your mother and father don't understand why you don't come over, blah, blah, blah. And then I looked around and I decided I was getting the worst patients of everybody when the two of us were working on any given day. The other guy was getting all the nice patients. I was getting all the bad patients. So there was lots of reasons for me to start rationalizing why I should take this stuff. But one thing leads to another, and before you know it, I am addicted. I don't know it. I have no comprehension whatsoever. Yeah, I know that I'll eventually get to the alcohol because This is an AA meeting, but in my story, I wasn't going to be an alcoholic like my dad. Absolutely was not going to be. So unbeknownst to me, I had to come in through the back door through drug addiction before alcohol came into my story. And of course, eventually it did. It actually came in at the very, very end of my story. I ended up not being able to sleep because of the amount of caffeine that I was taking. My sleep situation is nasty anyway because of the fact that I'm dealing with headaches and all these other things. So one thing leads to another, and I wind up becoming addicted. And then I can't get enough of the medication. So bottom line is, I started writing my own prescriptions. And that seemed like a good idea to me. I'm a bright guy. I'm in the upper 50th percentile of people that are pretty smart to get where I got to in life. And yet that was a pretty good idea, knowing full well somewhere in the back of my mind that writing your own prescriptions is a felony. Well, as luck would have it, again, we were on vacation one time, and I ended up coming home from vacation. But before we left on vacation, I thought, I can save probably $2 by having my forged prescriptions filled at my own hospital. So I went and got my prescription sent down to the pharmacy before we left. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't even, because again, we do our best thinking, we're at the absolute height of our addiction. And I didn't even think that, I used a obstetrician's name to sign for my prescriptions. And I'm a guy, and he's an obstetrician. And obstetricians generally don't write prescriptions for men. So a very bright pharmacy tech ended up getting it and took it to her boss and says, I think we got a problem here, boss. That was followed up by the Cincinnati drug enforcement agent paying me a visit when I got home. And I got arrested and charged with 4 felonies. So that got my attention pretty quickly. And that unfavorably for my poor wife, was her first idea that I had a problem. One thing my dad did teach me was how to be a functional addict. And I was functional for, I guess it was somewhere between maybe 5 and 8 years that I had this going on. So anyway, so as luck would have it, again, you'll hear as luck would have it a lot in my talk. Ohio had just started a drug program 5 years previous, where if I was a nonviolent drug offender, I didn't have a gun or a knife involved, didn't threaten anyone, I could do a special program that lasted 15 months that would get me through this program. I'd have my felonies expunged, and I could get my job back. So all that happened. And it was just a blueprint that I finally needed to have, that I finally got. And as a result, that now comes the good part of the story, what happened afterwards. I started going to meetings, and I went to a meeting. It's called the Grapevine 2. We read the Grapevine magazine and discuss the story. And what I have to go back to and say is, on the very first meeting that I went to, my wife had to drive me because I was in no shape to drive. I was just shaky and just out of my mind. And she took me to this meeting, and they did the usual stuff that they do at every first meeting. They passed around a where and when. And at the end, some gentleman came up to me and he says, here, Greg, we got this for you. I says, what's this? He said, it's called a where and when. I says, what's this about? He says, well, this is the meetings that we have in our area, and the names that we have at the end here, these 7 guys that signed the back of it here, are guys that are willing to take a phone call if you feel like you need to give need a little help some night in the early going of this new journey you're going to go on. And so I said, so you're saying that if at 3 o'clock in the morning my ass is on fire, that I can call you up, you who I don't know from Adam, and you'll kind of talk me through whatever I'm going through? And he says, yeah, that's what we do. I said, wow, Jim, that's really great. Thanks. I never called him, never went back to that meeting, went to some other meetings. And so before you know it, the good things are starting to happen. I got my job back. I found eventually my mom and dad died actually right before my recovery started. I celebrate my anniversary is May 23rd of 2000. Both my parents died in 98, 99. So I got to make my amends at the gravesite, because I had no idea that my dad, who went through what he went through, was able to do what he was able to do without recovery. So my whole perspective changed on my father that I was angry a lifelong time about bitterness, anger, angst. And one of the interesting things was in my first couple of meetings I went to, I found a woman who just looked like my mom, acted like my mom, smoked like my mom. Because I was now an orphan, I'm an orphan at what was it then, 50 years old, I asked her if she would adopt me, and she did. And it's kind of cool. She became my mom's sponsor, I call her. And she's a very special lady in my life who I call mom because she just reminds me of mom. So anyway, moving on, I found that in my appreciation for everything that AA has given to me, I like to be of service back to this organization. So in the days before COVID, one of my pastimes was I made thousands upon thousands of laminated sayings for folks that are new in AA. Keep it simple, practice the pause, third step prayers, all the different prayers. I put them on bookmarks and whatever and give them to newcomers. I was in a program called ADAPT that was 1 year. Well, I shouldn't say 1 year. No, it was 3 months inpatient. And the only way that the meetings get to these folks in inpatient is when people come and take the meetings in. So I was appreciative of that as well. And one of my fellow inmates, shall we call ourselves Carl? I called him Carl Bling. He was a small black guy with a whole bunch of gold bling jewelry. He worked for the post office, and God bless the post office. This was his 13th incarceration, so to speak, and not once did he get fired from the post office. So there's living proof you can work for the post office and absolutely never get fired because of substance abuse. But anyway, he's the one that says, "Hey, Greg, why don't we take the meeting back to the guys like we had the meeting brought in?" So I did that for a dozen years, and that was a very rewarding experience as well. I got to do some things that, I never dreamed would have happened. I had one gentleman who was just despondent because his girlfriend left him, and I spent about 20 minutes talking to him at the end of the meeting, and just told him, "There's nothing I can do about this. I ain't going to tell you the other, all the other fish in the sea. All I'm saying is this is the kind of stuff that happens as consequences of our disease. And I love you, and I hope, you take this okay, and you get through this." And the next week he came up and he gave me a big hug, and he said, "I want to thank you for saving my life." And I says, "Why?" He says, "Because just before you came up to talk to me, I had it all planned out how I was going to kill myself the next day. And because there was one person I thought in this world that said he loves me, maybe there's something, I can do to, turn this around." And there was that. The other thing I like to talk about is one of the I had two pretty fascinating things happen in my recovery. I remember Jim, the guy that gave me my where and when I first went to my first meeting. 7 years after I met Jim, I'm at the Grapevine meeting once again. And who walks in but Jim? Now, he ain't going to remember me because I'm the guy that showed up once to a meeting and he never saw me again. I'm never going to forget him because he's the guy that handed me my first where and when, told me how the program worked. He was the hand of AA that reached out to me. So I couldn't pay attention to anything that was going on in the meeting. I ended up going up to him afterwards, and I said, "You don't remember me, but I distinctly remember you." And he says, "Oh yeah." I said, "Well, you're right. I don't remember you." And I said, "You gave me my first where and when, and I just wanted to thank you profusely because you were the hand of AA when I needed it, and I can't thank you enough." So I said, "Well, I'm glad I was there." So we parted, and the next week he comes back again. This time I paid attention to the story, and at the end of the story in the meeting, he came up to me afterwards. He said, "I got a question for you." I said, "What's that?" He says, "That was 7 years ago I gave you that where and when." I says, "That's right." He said, "You've been clean and sober ever since then." And I said, "Well, by the grace of God and a little bit of work on my part, yeah." He says, "Well, I want to tell you that I haven't been able to string together 6 months in those 7 years that you've been sober. I've been in and out, through sponsor after sponsor. I've been to jail, I've been to prison, and I'm out of jail once again. And my sponsor thinks I need to find some new direction." So he said, "So you apparently have got something that I haven't figured out yet. Would you be my sponsor?" And I about dropped my jaw onto the floor. I said, "What?" I says, "You who gave me my where and when 7 years ago want me to be your sponsor?" He says, "Yeah, would you?" I said, "I'd be honored and privileged." So anyway, long story short, I got to work with him for a year and a half, which is the most sobriety that he had in the last 7 years. Interestingly enough, he was going through the same program that I was just having graduated from, and I could see him getting squirrely at the end, and nothing I could do. He disappeared and went back out, and I only pray that he eventually finally got this. And I'm getting close to the end of my time, so I'll leave you with my favorite story. Remember, I told you that I forged my own prescriptions and put an obstetrician's name on the bottom of it? Well, that doctor's name was Dr. C, I shall call him. He was the curmudgeon of the obstetricians that I worked with. And when he found out that I was forging his name, he was sort of an irate fellow because they thought that he might have been implicated in a drug ring or something like that. So anyway, so he had it in for me, I thought. He went to my bosses and he told my bosses, he said, "I don't know if you intend for Greg to work here if and when he gets out of prison, but it's either going to be him or me. I'm not going to work here with him if he comes back." And to my boss's credit, God love my boss, he looked at Dr. C and says, "Well, Dr. C, we'll miss you." And that didn't go over very big either. But it told me that, my bosses had my back, which not everybody can say. I was very fortunate. Luckily in medicine, people understand about addiction a little bit more maybe than in the corporate world. So anyway, so as time goes by, I figure I'm going to have to make my amends to this guy. To his credit, when I did come back, he didn't cause me any trouble. He didn't tell his patients, "If there's two anesthetists working today, you want the one not named Greg." He didn't do anything like that. But he was cold towards me for the first couple of years. Didn't, say anything. Didn't acknowledge when I'd say hi or try to be, approachable. But then finally, after about 4 years, I figured the time it probably come okay to finally make my amends to him when it prevailed. So one day we both show up in the doctor's dressing room, OB, and there's nobody else there. And I thought, well, here it is. This is time. So I go up to him and I said, "Dr. C," I said, "I just wanted to explain to you what all went down 4 years ago and explain that it had absolutely nothing to do with you. Said that your only implication in all of this is you write your name, Dr. C, and you make a straight line, which is probably the easiest forgery anybody in the history of forgery had to do. And so I chose your name just because of that when I was at the bottom of my hole that I had dug for myself. So that's the only reason that I chose you. It was nothing personal at all." And I said, "And I know that incensed you. I knew that made you very angry. And I just wanted to let you know that was what I did when I was at the bottom of my hole. And I, wish to say that you may have noticed that hopefully that I'm a better anesthetist than I was 4 years ago, and that I'm doing the very best I can to be a living amends, so to speak, and give everybody the attention and the care that they deserve without my being impaired. And I just wanted to let you know that." And he didn't say anything for a little bit, and I thought, oh, what's going to go on here now? Then he finally says, that took a lot of courage. I appreciate you doing that." He says, "I read into it a bit, followed up a little bit on, addiction and this and that." And he says, "I appreciate what you had to say." And he said, "I think we can probably work okay together from here on out." So with that, we're working together one day, and we're doing a C-section. He's the surgeon. I'm the anesthetist. I've given the lady her spinal. I don't have a whole lot to do while they're getting the baby out and doing the repair work. So I'm just sitting there, just kind of like, twiddling my thumbs. And the nurse who was supposed to be in charge of doing all the paperwork, Rita was her name, and she had horrible penmanship. I'm an artist, and I also do calligraphy. So what I ended up doing was she looks over at me and she says, "Greg, you look bored." She says, "Why don't you use your really nice penmanship? Go into your office and get one of your really nice calligraphy pens and do a really nice job on this birth certificate the parents get to take home." So I said, "Okay, I'd be happy to." So I did that. And then at the end of the case, I don't sign it, but the scrub nurse, and not the scrub nurse, the circulating nurse and the doctor signed the birth certificate, and they send one downtown and they give one to the parents. So anyway, so Rita gives Dr. C the copy for them to take home, and he looks at it, and he's looking at it, and he's looking at it, and he says, "Rita," he says, "you didn't do this." And she said, no, I didn't." So anyway, he says, "Well, who did this?" And She says, well, Greg did it because he's a good calligrapher. Without even thinking, he looks over at me. He says, Greg, would you sign this for me? And with that, all I had to say was, Joe, I tried that once before and it got me into a whole lot of trouble. So, no, you get to sign it yourself. And with that, he and I went off on probably a 5-minute laughing jag. The scrub nurse, the circulating nurse, the resident, the scrub tech, the mom, the dad, and the baby had no idea what was going on. But Joe and I had our full circle come around on the positive effect of making amends and how something like that can come full circle. So anyway, I'm coming to the end here. I certainly appreciate all you listening. I'm really sorry there's nobody here from Ireland. I can't say that I did an international meeting now. I don't know. But it was nice talking to you all. And I thank God that you're all here for me to continue our journey in AA through the Zoom format. And that's all I got. Thanks.